Yes, thank you very much. So yeah, this talk is about some recent work that I did on this subject of thermalization. And the goal is to present some rigorous result in the subject and perhaps some framework that can be useful, especially in the context of integrable systems. Okay? So the situation I'm going to talk about is very simple. It's that situation. So you imagine you start with some initial quantum state. It can be a pure state or a mixed state. You then perform a unitary time evolution on that state for a long enough time. And then the question you ask is, after a long enough time, will the system thermalize? Okay? So you have to ask this question in a precise fashion so that it makes sense. So you think that, of course, if the system is finite, there will be no large time limit. There will be some oscillation. There won't be any thermalization. Okay? So the system has to be very large so that you may hope to have some kind of thermalization. You may hope that whatever initial distribution there is can be absorbed in some asymptotic way in the system itself so that at least it looks thermal at some scales. And it will not look thermal everywhere, but perhaps if you just look in some reduced, in some local space, if you look at the reduced density matrix, for instance, in some local space, perhaps that can be thermal. Okay? So this is a problem of thermalization. So you start with some very large system, infinitely large, make a large time evolution, look locally, and ask the question, is that thermal or not? You can also ask the question, does a large time limit exist? Okay, that's another question. But the question I'm concentrating on is that of thermalization. Okay? So that's okay. So this goes under the name of quantum quench. You start with a state which is not an eigenstate of Hamiltonian and let it evolve. Okay? And okay, so a bit more precision on that. So what I'm talking about is some quantum lattice, say hypercubic lattice, of some dimensionality d. It can be any dimensionality. And okay, I'm looking at some state, some initial state. Here it's a pure state, but in general doesn't need to be pure. And the state, I'm going to describe it by looking at averages of observables. Okay, so you've got some initial state. You can calculate average of observable in that state. And then you take some time evolution of that thing. Okay? So H, some Hamiltonian, not any Hamiltonian, short-range interaction, so local Hamiltonian with local energy densities. Okay? And the time evolution is just, you know, e to the iht, a e to the mass iht. And this is seen as, again, something acting on observables. Okay? And with these, of course, you with this Hamiltonian, you can form the thermal Gibbs state, which is exponential minus beta h a, or normalized. Okay? And then you may ask, well, suppose now I evolve this whole thing in time, you know, in that initial state, do I get something that looks like a thermal Gibbs state? Right? And in general, you will not, except if you take the limit in the right way. And the right way, at least intuitively, is that you should first take the thermodynamic limit, as I just said. So you take all these expressions there that you know, depend on L, and take the infinite L limit in all of that. And after you've taken the infinite L limit, then look at the large time limit. Actually, there are two natural questions. One of them is, if the large time limit does the large time limit exist? And that would be equilibration, usually referred to as equilibration. If it does exist, then the result, which is linear functional on observables, is this result equal to that linear functional given by thermal Gibbs state? Okay? These are two questions. I'm going to be addressing the second question. Okay, a lot of people have looked into that. There's a lot of nice results, some nice results in this context. And one of the, not a result, but a hypothesis which leads to results in this context is the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. I'm mentioning it here because it's a very important concept in the context of thermalization. But it's a hypothesis, and there's no proof of it. And even its very formulation is not completely known. So the exact formulation of the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis is not known what it should be. Okay? But the idea is rather simple. The idea is it's an idea of thermalization, in a way. But it doesn't involve time. Okay? So the idea is you start with a state, you have a state, and you assume it's an eigenstate of a Hamiltonian. It's time, eigenstate of Hamiltonian. This eigenstate may be characterized by many parameters, but certainly is characterized by the energy, the corresponding eigenenergy. And the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis tells you that in this eigenstate, the averages of local observables only depend on the energy and the observable itself, of course. They don't depend on anything else. So you may imagine that you may have a lot of degeneracies. Well, it just depends on the energy. Now, if you have a non-integrable model, and when you ask about thermalization, of course, integrability is really important, and come back to that. If you have a non-integrable model, very often the energy eigenstates are not degenerate. So, of course, the energy completely characterizes the state. So the more precise notion is that, well, suppose you have a sequence of energy eigenstate such that the energy density converges, a sequence for larger and larger and larger system. Okay? Well, if you take that sequence and now evaluate averages of any local observables, these averages will only depend on the observable and that energy density. Okay? So there's some kind of continuum, continuous. And this function is going to be smooth as a function of E. Okay? Smoothness is actually kind of the non-trivial part of this hypothesis. So small differences of energy densities give small differences of averages of any other local observable. The slightly stronger version of this hypothesis is that not only this is true, but that function is nothing else but thermal gives state at infinite volume. Okay? So any eigenstate will lead to that. Okay? So that's the hypothesis. And this hypothesis is very, very nice because you can actually prove, or at least almost prove, certain things. It essentially says that if you have a stationary state, it has to be thermal. And so if you have equilibration, it should be a stationary state, it should be a thermal give state. So that's thermalization. Okay? As I said, there's no proof of that hypothesis, but it's an important concept, and it's something that people have observed numerically many times. So it is something that's quite important. But okay, so yes, you have a question there.
Would there be exceptions? I mean, you construct a very strange sort of sequence of energy eigenstates,
and then it doesn't work. Yeah, certainly. So this would be too strong a statement, I believe. So there would be more. This is not the correct statement, most likely. So you probably need some type of typicality or something. It's probably almost surely there's something additional you need to say, but I don't know what it is, and I don't think anybody knows.
Is there any equivalent of this statement in classical?
I don't know. I mean, but basically this is what is meant to replace the assumption of chaos in classical cases, that you use. This is meant to replace that. Right? I don't want to go too much into that, because I don't know the precise answer to your question. So I don't know the precise analog in classical case. But that's meant to be the analog of classical chaos that you use in order to. It's supposed to be the analog of ergodicity, actually. Right? It was introduced in that way. Ergodicity. Sorry?
Is there any thermalization of this kind in classical state? No.
Can
your system leave it alone?
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And then it will thermalize in classical
state. Well, I don't think it's proven, but certainly this is meant to be a quantum analog of classical ergodicity. But okay, yeah, so but I don't know more than that. Okay. Other questions? Yes.
So when you said it's not clear what the state should be, was that about this typicality?
So typicality is something, you see, probably it's not true that any sequence satisfying these conditions will work, will give that. Okay. You probably need to. It might be that almost surely every sequence, or with respect to certain measure, pick some random sequence that have these properties, that will work. So there's you must probably give some kind of measure, and on that measure you're going to have something where, well, almost everywhere this will work. But so I don't know exactly what the measure is. That's something I would suppose. I don't know any more than that.
Okay.
Other questions? So I start with something I don't know, but I'm going to something that I know better. Yes?
The system you want to study is Hamiltonian systems.
Yes, certainly, Hamiltonian system. So no disorder is homogeneous, you know, short-range interaction Hamiltonian system. So translation invariance and everything. This is what I'm studying. Okay. But you can have familiarization in this case as well. So if you have integrability, this conference about integrability, certainly these statements have to fail, because you cannot just look at the energy eigenvalue. You got to look at eigenvalues of other conserved quantities as well. Okay? A natural generalization of all that is to consider not a thermal Gibbs state, but what is called a GGE, a generalized Gibbs ensemble. Okay? What's that? Well, basically, instead of putting just Hamiltonian, you put a sum, say, infinite sum of all the conserved charges of your system. Okay? Now, what are the conserved charges of your system? Well, this can be very delicate. And the original proposal was that you should put the local conserved charges in this sum, right? Infinite sum of local conserved charges. So you have to take a limit L goes to infinity. So you know, we have more and more local conserved charges as L goes to infinity. So there's, you must define this limit in particular ways. Okay? But there are ways to define that. You can actually calculate this stuff even numerically using various techniques in integrable models. Okay? And then there's natural generalization of this ETH, which was basically proposed by Cohen Isler, which is that actually in general, when you do this kind of energy eigenstate, what you're going to have is not something that's just thermal, but something that's GGE. And then in general, well, the thermalization question is not just if large time limit exists, is it a Gibbs state, but if large time limit exists, is it a generalized Gibbs ensemble, and which one? What are the values of these betas and all that? Okay? So this is the generalized thermalization question. Okay? So there's equilibration and thermalization. Okay, any questions about this one? Generalized thermalization. Okay, so in fact, I told you have to put out the local conserved charges. Well, this is not quite true. It was found quite recently, actually, in a very nice paper, that it is essential to put not the local conserved charges, but also the quasi-local conserved charges. What are these? Well, these are conserved charges whose densities are not necessarily supported on a finite number of sites, but rather are supported on an infinite number of sites, but with, say, a weight or an amplitude that decays exponentially. You can construct these things explicitly in integrable models, like in XXZ chain. This was done by these people. These quasi-local charges was first introduced by Ilyevsky and Prosen, basically a long time ago. And, well, not so long ago, but some time ago. And it turns out that in these GGE, with certain initial state, the large time limit exists very often, but it's not thermal. And it's not the GGE with these local conserved charges. It's a GGE with these quasi-local conserved charges. So the HI in the exponential must include these charges as well. If you don't include them, it doesn't describe the right, it cannot describe the infinite time limit. Okay? So this was what was observed numerically in studying integrable models. Okay? That's the general situation about thermalization. There are many questions about this situation. Okay? Some of these questions are as follows. In that expression, which I didn't make very precise, there's a large L limit, there's a sum over I, HI, and all that. One can ask, this sum over I at L goes infinity, that's an infinite sum. Does that converge? Is it a convergent sum? In what sense is it convergent? That sum, the convergent, the limit, is it still local or quasi-local? What kind of locality property it has? And if it's not local, in fact, well, what you have here is anything. Because if you have any state which has equilibrated, which is stationary, well, you can always describe it as something which comes with Hamiltonian, an exponential of something which comes with Hamiltonian. And that it be local, if it's not local, well, it can be anything. Okay? If you want to say something that is non-trivial, you have to say something about the locality properties of this operator, or you know, something more. Okay? So one question is like that. So is it local? What kind of locality properties does it have? what kind of, what's the fundamental way of characterizing the GGE density matrix, that thing? Is there a more fundamental way of characterizing it? Okay? So what is this? This question. And then the other questions are, what are the conditions that guarantee thermalization or generalized thermalization? In what situations will you have convergence to either GGE or thermal Gibbs state? Okay? So these are some of the questions that I would like to assess, to explore in this talk. Okay? Questions about this? So if you want to have precise mathematical results, you have to have a framework. The natural framework for quantum lattices is that of C-star algebras. I'm not going to use very much of C-star algebras. It's very simple what I'm going to use. But what you think of here is, well, basically what I've told you about, but you kind of formalize the whole thing. So you have some space of observables called O, some norm on these observables. Turns out you can complete it to a C-star algebras under this norm. So add the Cauchy sequences. Okay? There's some translation variance, and the state is just a continuous linear function on this algebra. Okay? So it gives the averages. It's invariant under translation, as I said, yeah. And the state on the identity operator is one. Okay? And then the Hamiltonian, you can describe it by giving an energy density. Okay? Of course, the sum over the whole lattice is a priori given, taken to be infinite. Okay? So there's no infinite volume to be taken there. This is infinite volume from the start. Okay? And so, of course, the Hamiltonian, if you sum over the whole lattice, it's not an operator that exists within this C-star algebra. It's infinite. It doesn't exist. Okay? What exists, though, is its density. And you can consider partial sums of these Hamiltonians, sum over larger and larger sublattices, say, bounds of radius n in the sublattice. And given that, then you can define time evolution as large n limit of time evolution with finite sublattices, and Gibbs state also as large m limit. And these limits exist and give rise to proper time evolution as a strongly continuous unitary group and state translation invariant linear functional. Okay? That works, yes. Yes. So this is, that's why I cite these people. So in higher D, you can have phase transition, and that limit can be proven to exist and to be unique if the temperature is large enough. There's a lower temperature, which was explicitly given in that paper. Universal lower temperature just depends on structure of lattice and the various things. Okay. So, and that's the region where that I'm going to be looking at. In 1D, that limit exists independently. Yeah. Other questions? Okay. So that's the context I'm looking into. So. First thing, in order to get some results, you have to assume certain things about the state. And the basic assumption I'm going to make is about clustering. Okay? Clustering means that if you look at a state of a product of observables, and the observables are very far from each other, then that state is basically the product of the state on these observables. This is clustering. Okay? So basically, these observables become independent. Now, how strong the clustering is, well, you need to express it in rather precise fashion. There are different ways of expressing clustering that have occurred in literature, so this includes a lot of these ways. So you say that the difference between the state of AB minus state of A, state of B, that difference is very small when the distance is very large. And how small? With a power. Power that's big enough, bigger than the dimension. Okay? That's the assumption about clustering. Okay? Then there's also the norm of the operators that occur, and some number that depends on the size of the operator, how many sites these operators cover. So these are observables on finite number of sites. How many sites do they cover? Okay? Well, there's some expression of that. And if you have such a clustering, it's not too hard to see that the susceptibilities exist. In other words, the sum of x of omega AXB minus omega A omega B, that sum is finite and exists. And here I'm taking not just AXB, but the anticommutator, the symmetric version of it, just because it's more convenient for various things, but it's just a technicality. Okay? So assuming clustering, you have these susceptibilities, which are denoted by this symbol, A comma B, and they all exist. Okay? Under this, so one of the things is that the Gibbs state sets have very nice properties. In particular, they satisfy this clustering. Okay? So here is this lower temperature or higher bound for the inverse temperature that I was telling you about. Okay? This is taken from that paper. The theorem is that if you have a thermal Gibbs state, well, it is clustering or sizably clustering, like the property I've just expressed, uniformly, and not just the state itself, but any time evolution of it also is. Okay? So you have a state which is thermal with respect to some Hamiltonian, and a time evolution which is with respect to some other local Hamiltonian. Okay? In fact, you can put as many time evolution as you want with respect to different local Hamiltonian. And that stuff always is clustering the way I've said it. Okay? So it has very nice properties for every beta that is small enough, so for every large enough temperature and for every time. Okay? And not only that, actually, if you evaluate this on some observable, it's actually an analytic function of the inverse temperature. Okay? So it has very nice properties. Okay? And that can be proven. So this property of Gibbs states, so they have this clustering property and all that. Using that and extending that a little bit, you can come to a re-thermalization theorem. Start with a Gibbs state, thermal Gibbs state, and time evolve with a different Hamiltonian. Do you get another Gibbs state? Okay, that's the question. Do you get the Gibbs state associated to this different Hamiltonian? Okay, that would be the question. And the answer is yes under certain conditions. What are the conditions? Well, three conditions, basically. Okay? One of them is that this family of states, okay, Gibbs states evolve in time, they have to be clustering. But okay, I said already that they are clustering always, but they have to be clustering for all time uniformly. Okay? So even if you look at large time, this still has to be clustering. So that's a non-trivial thing, but you know, it's physically natural. Okay? Second thing, the large time limit of this time evolved susceptibility must exist. It's some technical condition. Okay? If the large time limit of susceptibility of time evolved A, comma B, if that large time limit exists, okay, then it's okay. Okay? The third condition, I'm going to come back to it, it says that this dynamics should be completely mixing. What does that mean? It just means that basically the Hamiltonian of the dynamics should not have any conserved charges other than itself. Okay? Now, this I have to make that more precise, and I'll come to how I make that more precise very soon. Okay? But basically, it should be not integrable, because if it's integrable, you don't expect to have thermalization, of course. Okay? If these three conditions hold, then the large time limit of this composition, the stationary state, exists and is a thermal Gibbs state with respect to that Hamiltonian at some temperature, which I don't know what it is. Okay? So this is thermalization. These conditions are more or less like suppose that the large time limit exists. It's kind of equilibration, okay? A certain type of equilibration. If there's equilibration, then there's thermalization. And that's completely general. Okay, for any on any hypercubic lattice with local Hamiltonian that is homogeneous. Okay? Any questions about this? Yes. I haven't verified. Of course, in three models, well, you don't have that thing, but you can verify some of these. Okay? So in three situations, it's not too hard to verify this. But in other models is rather difficult, and I haven't done it. I expect that this should be satisfied, but I haven't done it. Other questions? So, of course, this has to do with, in principle, with non-integrable Hamiltonian, so it's very difficult, so one has to do some numerics to verify this stuff. Okay? So that's the theorem. Okay? The question is, what is this completely missing? The fact that there exists no conserved charges other than Hamiltonian itself, evolution Hamiltonian itself. Okay? Well, that's the question that involves pseudo-locality. Okay? So as I said in the beginning, we should not just look at local charges, but charges which have other locality properties. Okay? And you need pseudo-locality. This is a concept that was actually introduced by Prosen in 1998-99. And I have here kind of a generalization extension of that concept, or something that's a bit more precise. What's a pseudo-local charge? Well, these charges, in principle, it's like the Hamiltonian. There's sum over the whole lattice, right? So they don't really exist as operators on the C-star algebra. It doesn't make sense. So you have to define them a bit more carefully. So you take that, you take a sequence of observables that is bigger and bigger, supported on larger and larger sub-lattices, okay? And you ask for certain conditions for the sequence of observables. What are the conditions? Well, one of them is that if you take if you look at the q times q, so q star times q, the observable, which is a square, okay, of it, and take its evaluate this observable in the state, that should not grow too fast, should not grow more than the volume. Okay? So if you think about it, a local observable like Hamiltonian on finite sublattices, if you take it square, because of clustering, the average of the square will grow like the volume. Because you will end up with having to sum over Hamiltonian densities over different sites, and you end up with a volume contribution because of translation invariance. So there's a volume law condition. Okay? The other condition is that the limit, if you put this sequence of charges times some local observable and evaluate in the state, that limit should exist. And here everything is not just square, but it's antisymmetrized, but that's for technical reason. Okay? But it's a bit like the square. So if you take that limit, that should exist. So take this Qn times A, the large n limit, so when the limit when the observable becomes bigger and bigger, that limit exists. Okay? And finally, you should have some kind of translation variance for that limit, but something that's a bit more uniformly translation invariant. Okay? And this limit, which I said should exist, is something that I call epsilon charge. So it's a linear functional on observables. Okay? So this is the set of things that we're looking into, and this is a set of things that we have to have condition on in order to know if the Hamiltonian is integrable or not, or mixing or not. Okay? These linear functionals on observables. Okay, so naturally, if you have these partial sums over translated local observables, these satisfy all these conditions. You can check; it's easy to see. They satisfy all the conditions. Okay, so these are, you know, give rise to pseudo local charge. And what is the limit action? The limit action is nothing else but the susceptibility. Right? So the pseudo local charge is kind of a generalization of this construction. Instead of taking a Hamiltonian, which is the sum over finite over densities, which are supported on finite number of sites, and then its action being just susceptibility, where you have these more general conditions. Okay? The quasi-local charges introduced by Lievski and Prosen also are examples of these things. Okay? But the pseudo-local charges are more general. Okay? And these pseudo-local charges satisfy a certain clustering property. So it's a bit like some derivation property, like a vector field property. Yes, questions? Smaller than the dimension, you mean the here, please? Yes, you can. I don't know of an explicit example, but this is part of the family for sure. Yes. Other questions? Okay, so these are absolute local charges. Okay? And the completely mixing condition, okay, in order to have thermalization, is the condition according to which the Hamiltonian revolution should not possess any concept pseudo-local charges other than itself. Okay? Well, the Hamiltonian acts, you know, the time evolution acts by infinitesimally by differentiation, so you can define a generator of time transformation by just commutation with the Hamiltonian. Okay? So there's a natural operator acting on local observables defined by the Hamiltonian density. Okay? And a state is stationary, of course, if when you apply it on this natural generator, it gives zero for every local observable. Okay. And then you say that epsilon local charge is conserved if when you apply it on that generator, and it defined with respect to that state that's stationary, you apply it on the commutator of H with A, if that gives zero. Okay. So this is very natural because according to the definition I've given you, this is nothing else than the state omega on the product of q times h comma a, and if you use the fact that omega is stationary, this is h comma q comma a, and that should be zero if q commutes with h. Okay? So there's a little calculation you can do. Of course, here I'm not saying that the qn in the sequence of charges commute with h. They might, perhaps none of them commute with h. Okay? What I'm saying is the limit, the large n limit, should be stationary. So you may have a large n limit as obtained with a sequence of charges that are not stationary, okay? But the large limit itself should be. Okay? And then, well, a complete mixing Hamiltonian is such that given any stationary state omega with respect to the Hamiltonian, the condition that Q be conserved implies that Q is proportional to the Hamiltonian itself. So a very precise condition, okay? And that implies thermalization. Yeah. Two questions about this. So this is akin to, say, not being integrable, Hamiltonian not being integrable. Okay? But it's kind of a more precise definition of it, which involve pseudo-local charges. Okay? So you have to look for conserved pseudo-local charges. It's a bigger family. Okay? If you want to get stronger results, you've got to enlarge the family of states instead of just having thermal gift states, enlarge it a little bit. Okay? And there's a very nice family of states that can be constructed out of pseudo-local charges, indeed. Okay? So consider the Gibbs state themselves. We know that if we differentiate with respect to beta, the density matrix, we get H times the density matrix itself. Right? Well, if you differentiate with respect to the beta, the average in the thermal state of some observable, what you get is nothing else but the susceptibility, of course, the susceptibility of this observable with respect to that Hamiltonian density. Okay? And that, by definition, is the application of this pseudo-local charge associated to the Hamiltonian on that observable. And once you find this, well, you can say one can reinterpret that as the pseudo-local charge being some tangent vector at a point given by the state, okay, applied on an observable, which is like a function on this space. Okay. And this is essentially a flow equation, equation that tells you how the state, how the point varies along, you know, along a curve. And the tangent vector is something that tells you the tangent of that curve. Okay. So it's a flow equation that starts with the infinite temperature state at beta equals 0. So you can generalize this picture and say that you have a family of pseudo-local charges and a curve of states that satisfy this differential equation. Okay? So you start with the infinite temperature state and then go to some other state. And you require that everywhere the curve be tangent to this pseudo-local charge. So pseudo-local charges are just really tangent vectors. Okay? And this is essentially like having path order exponentials. Okay? So instead of just having exponential of a Hamiltonian, it's like a path order exponential of a sequence of operators. So not just Hamiltonian sequence of operators. Okay? So that's a definition one can take. Now, if you want to be more precise and get some results, you've got to take the integrated version of that definition. So we define these pseudo-local state as being states which are obtained by such flow on a manifold of states. Okay? And the flow, okay, so the states have to be uniformly clustering, bounded on the flow, on the flow, and the pseudo-local charges are also uniformly bounded. Okay? And so you can define pseudo-local states as states which are endpoints of such flow controlled by pseudo-local charges, here written in integrated version. These are nice. This is a nice family of states. The Gibbs states are part of that, are certain, you know, certain special cases of this. And in fact, if you take any pseudo-local state and time evolve it with the local Hamiltonian, you would still get a pseudo-local state. And that's not the case of Gibbs states, of course. Time evolved Gibbs states are no longer Gibbs states. Okay? So this family is invariant on the time evolution. Okay, so it's a nice family to be to consider. It's a generalization of Gibbs states. Okay? And there's something similar to an eigenstate thermalization hypothesis within that family. So if you look within that family of states, rather big family of states, and if you ask for the state to be pseudo-local, but not only pseudo-local, but also stationary, with respect to some completely mixing Hamiltonian, then that state has to be a thermal Gibbs state. Okay? So stationary implies thermal. Okay? Whenever the Hamiltonian is not integrable. So that is true within that family of state, precisely defined family of state. Okay? So there's a precise theorem about this. Okay? So you have to have certain conditions of analyticity as well. Okay? But the precise, the main spirit of the statement is like that. So if you have a pseudo-local state, which is stationary with respect to Hamiltonian, if this Hamiltonian is not integrable, so completely mixing, okay, then that state has to be a thermal Gibbs state. And that's the basis for the first theorem that I was telling you, because if the large time limit exists, then the state is stationary, and then you have that. Okay. any questions about it? And now you can define the generalized Gibbs ensembles within that family. So it's a very natural definition. You just say that a generalized Gibbs ensemble is such a pseudo-local state, so a part of the exponential of integral of a sequence of charges. All you ask is that this sequence of charges, these QS, which are along the flow, that they be conserved charges for the Hamiltonian everywhere along the flow. So GGE is an exponential of conserved charges. Okay? But here, in a more precise fashion. Okay? So GGE, with respect to some Hamiltonian, is a pseudo-local state, one of these parts of the exponential, okay, with the property that for almost everywhere on the flow, the state itself on that flow is invariant on this Hamiltonian, and the pseudo-local charge is conserved by this Hamiltonian. Okay? These two properties are expressed in these two equations. Okay? So GGE is essentially a path of the exponential of pseudo-local conserved charges, okay, instead of being exponential of a sum of local or quasi-local charge. Okay? So that's a precise expression of this thing. Okay? And this definition is interesting because it also accounts for the possibility of having charges that don't commute with each other. So if charges don't commute with each other, it's kind of more natural to take path of the exponentials, which are equivalent to flows. Okay? And so this naturally accounts for that, why in the usual expression, you usually think of these QI to commute with each other. Other people have looked at situations where they don't. Okay? Yes?
Can you tell us why you need two paths?
So this is, thank you for asking, this is a bit of a technicality. I was taking these anticommutators, so that's why there's these two paths of the exponential. Now, one thing is I could do a similar construction with a single path of the exponential, but this has nicer properties under conjugation. So if these Qs are Hermitian, then this whole thing also is. If you just have one path of the exponential, then it's not necessarily the case. Unless, of course, they all commute with each other, but they don't necessarily commute with each other. Okay? Other questions? So that's the precise definition within this context. Once you have a definition, then you can prove something. Okay? So here's a generalized thermalization theorem. Okay? So under certain conditions, which are similar to the conditions about re-thermalization, you have generalized thermalization. Okay? So suppose you have a state, okay, so omega, so here is not, you don't start with a thermal Gibbs state, but rather with something more general, with a pseudo-local state. So suppose you have a pseudo-local state, okay? And you look at its large time dynamics. So the pseudo-local state evolves in time, and suppose these two conditions are satisfied. Okay? So that state, everywhere along the flow, and for all times, is clustering, so uniformly sizably clustering. So certainly it is everywhere along the flow, and certainly it is for any finite time by theorems. Okay? So what is non-trivial here is asking that it is also for infinite time. So you've got to have clustering even at infinite time. Okay? And if the last time limit time evolve susceptibility or two times susceptibilities, if these last time limits exist everywhere along the flow, if these two conditions are satisfied, then the last time limit of the state exists. So it's like equilibration. But not only that, this last time limit of the state is a GGE according to my definition. Okay? So it's something that is controlled by conserved pseudo-local charges. Okay? So the consequence of that is that actually this exponential of sum of I beta I hi has nice locality properties. Okay? It's not just some arbitrary sum of conserved charges. It's something that is itself local, in fact, pseudo-local in general. Okay? Question about this? What's the main thing that allows me to prove these things? Well, the main thing is a Hilbert space structure in the built out of the susceptibilities. Okay? So the susceptibility is a comma b, so sum over the lattice of a of x times b. These can be seen to form as a squilinear form. Okay? They are positive semi-definite, and you can then, you know, take away a null space, complete the quotient by a null space, so add the Cauchy sequences. It's like a GNS construction in sister algebra. And you get a Hilbert space. Okay, that's a Hilbert space. And this Hilbert space is at the basis of this whole construction. Okay. The main thing, the main kind of theorem to construct everything, is that there is a bijection between this Hilbert space and the space of pseudo-local charges. So these pseudo-local charges are defined as limits of sequences of growing observables. You know, I define them as limits in the sense of action on local observables. These are nothing else than, you know, these elements in the Hilbert space. Can be characterized by these elements in the Hilbert space. And the way they are characterized is by the fact that the action of any pseudo-local charge on any local observables can be described by the overlap between anything in the Hilbert space, something in the Hilbert space, and that local observable. Okay? So an action is described by something in the Hilbert space. That Hilbert space is actually the space of densities of these charges. Right? So previously, for local charges, we had here just the ordinary density. So we complete this form, and then we get a space of density, pseudo-local densities of these charges. And so this is the one-to-one correspondence. Okay? And so any pseudo-local charge can then be extended to some continuous linear functional on the whole Hilbert space. So not just the local observable, the whole Hilbert space. And in fact, any continuous linear functional on the Hilbert space is a pseudo-local charge by the Riesz representation theorem. And it's using that that you can prove existence of pseudo-local charge in large time limit. Okay? You prove that certain things are continuous linear functional. Right? And that leads then to this generalized thermalization. Right? Any questions about this? Okay, I don't know how much time I have left, but I'm basically, I have five minutes, yeah. But basically, I'm coming to my conclusion, okay? So what is this? So this is some framework, mathematically precise framework, using a definition of pseudo-local charges, and including, so giving a family of states that includes thermal Gibbs states, but many other states, okay? And that allows me to study somehow quantum dynamics in infinite systems, in particular, prove, you know, find certain conditions under which one can prove thermalization, right, and generalized thermalization, okay, for integrable system. Results are partial because there are conditions, and one need to verify these conditions. Now that. Okay. But it does give some framework for studying these problems. Okay? And there is some kind of geometry behind that. There's a Hilbert space. There's a set of states that are, you know, pseudo-local charges, which are essentially like tangent vectors. Okay? So there is some kind of infinite dimensional Riemannian geometry in this within this framework. Okay? And that may be a nice way of viewing quantum dynamics using infinite dimensional Riemannian geometry. Okay. These pseudo-local states might seem, a bit a bit ad hoc definition. Okay. But I expect that many natural states are pseudo-local states. In particular, it's very likely there's a relation between Rényi entropies satisfying volume law and the fact that the state is pseudo-local. And there's a reason for that. Volume law Rényi entropies is essentially equivalent to the charge in the exponential satisfying this volume law, this quadratic volume law that I was talking about. Okay, there's a relation between these things. And if this is indeed the case, then we do have some relatively precise notion of eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. If Rényi entropies satisfy volume law in certain condition, then we have pseudo-local state. And if the pseudo-local state is stationary, with respect to Hamiltonian that's completely mixing, then I have proven thermalization. So that would be eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. Okay. it would be, of course, interesting to connect a bit more precisely with the GGA results. For instance, the, you know, this sum of I, beta I, h I that people have found numerically in the literature. You know, they have found that. So what is the sum of I, beta I, h I in my context? Well, I told you that there was a Hilbert space structure. So if you have a Hilbert space, you have a basis. And these h I in the original definition of GGE should be basis elements. Okay? So it's very likely that in XXZ, for instance, the space, the Hilbert space of conserved pseudo-local charges is spanned by a discrete set of quasi-local conserved charges. Okay? So this will form a basis with respect to that Hilbert space. Okay? And well, that's something to be explored. I think that would be interesting to explore that. Of course, one can think about using similar framework, not just for thermalization in homogeneous system, but looking at non-homogeneous system with transport and with currents and all that. Okay? And very likely, concept of pseudo-local charges, especially in integrable system, will play an important role. Okay? Yeah. So thank you for your attention.
Yeah. So first, a slight remark. All these GGE quasi-local charges have been tested to converge analytically, not numerically. So
yes.
It's an analytical check. Yeah.
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
But one thing of the GGE is that you can actually truncate it.
Yeah.
Because given a local operator, you want to reach a certain accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go back to this part. Which formula that you proposed for the GGE?
Mm-hmm.
Would it be there some information about
given
a certain operator, what
yes.
where I can truncate?
So not directly there, but so what is really happening is you've got to find a basis for this space of pseudo-local charges, and this is where you truncate. So the basis, there is a natural ordering of basis elements. Okay? So you know, basis elements will be bigger and bigger. It's natural ordering. Okay? And this is what will tell you where you should truncate. But that will depend on the model. So you've got to see what the model is and show that this is really a basis. Once you have a basis, then yeah, that will work. And you can truncate and you can have better and bigger accuracy for sure. Because the basis is what it tells you, right? The more you take, the nearer you are in the sense of the norm of the Hilbert space. If you are near in the normal Hilbert space, then this construction guarantees you that the result is near to the final result. So certainly there is convergence in that sense, yes. Yeah?
Maybe for technical reason, but the definition you are giving of charges depends on states.
Yes, that's very important. That's
so
correct.
My question is, do you think that there is something behind? So there can be possibilities of systems which are not generally integrable, but for which for appropriate initial condition, you need to put charges.
That is very possible, yes, certainly. I do believe that depending on the state, you may have a different set, different spaces of pseudo-local charges. However, in this construction, you have flows, so you have a family of states. Okay? So it's unlikely, but I don't know, but it's unlikely that you will have kind of a bigger family of states on the whole part of the flow. And everything really requires only things to hold are more surely on the flow. So if you have measure zero set of points where things are very different, that doesn't matter. Okay? It wouldn't change the results. You still have. So yes, it depends on the state, but I don't think it affects the intuition so much.
So you cannot have the same charges for the full flow.
So it's the same charges is a bit tricky because the charge is a thing that is really state dependent. It's not defined independently of the state. It's just not defined that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you might have the same everywhere on the flow is a set of basis elements for the Hilbert space. So you can express this basis element for the Hilbert space explicitly in terms of your local operators on the quantum lattice, if you wish. Okay? And you will have the same set. But then the whole Hilbert space will be different because this set will correspond to different normalization. So the mm-hmm. L2 space will be different because of this different normalization. So in the end, the whole, a given series that converges will converge to something different depending on the state. But the basis itself may be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would expect happens in integrable models. I think there was a question over there.
In classical ergodic systems, classical dynamical systems, there's this idea that if the system is mixing, then it's ergodic. This is
yes.
This famous result. And is so the way you started, you had these assumptions, then you implied thermalization. Is there some back way error, like reverse is also true in your case, or is it?
If you have thermalization assumption.
Can you prove that system has all the other properties?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. Actually, I haven't analyzed that.
I see. And one other question about the, you mentioned when the Rényi entropy is a volume law, all Rényi entropies, then system has these properties. But if I take a free fermion system or a completely free system, that also has volume law, Rényi entropies. But I don't expect it to be having thermalization.
No. But this is just to, so Rényi entropy volume law will say that the state has to be pseudo-local.
Okay, but that doesn't imply that.
It doesn't imply thermalization, like right. Generalized thermalization. So I think that will fall within the,
okay.
the context without
okay.
problem.
Sounds
yeah.
good. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Do you have within your framework an estimate of how the thermalization is approached? Like if there's an exponential decay or is
yeah.
it like some kind
that's
of
also a good question, and I haven't analyzed it. But in principle, I do have the whole time evolution, right? So I assume certain thing about large time limit, and I could observe what does that imply for the approach. That, but I haven't studied it so much. It's a good question, of course.
Looking forward to that.
Very good question. Yeah. For instance, you may have pre-thermalization if you're near integrability, so one can probably formulate these things a bit more precisely. What is it? What does it mean to be near integrability? So probably you can use that Hilbert space, to say how far you are, and then see that you might have pre-thermalization and later thermalization. So yeah.
Usually we think about evolution in quantum mechanics. Maybe think about oscillations,
yeah,
which is reflect quantum interference, up, down,
yes.
up, down. The envelope of this oscillation may indeed decay.
Yeah.
But oscillations in quantum mechanics, in Hamiltonian system, not supposed to decay. How does this be
so, yeah, that,
with thermalization process?
There are two types.
Typically means diffusion.
There are two types of equilibration. One is on the time integration. The other is directly taking large time limit. You can study these two types. Here, I've just taken large time limit. It is shown, people have shown in various situations that you don't need to integrate over time in order to have a large time limit that exists. Okay? There are works by, in particular, Jens Eisert and his team that show in certain situations that indeed, we take finite volume system, quantum lattice. You time evolve, and they can show that the system will be arbitrarily close to a certain state. I think in their work it was a Gaussian state, so kind of a generalized thermalization, arbitrarily close. And the bigger the system is, the closer it is, and it can determine at what time this will happen. There's a time, and of course, if you go beyond that time, then there's a time where this will happen. You don't need to integrate. These solutions you talk about disappear. Now, you have to be careful. What we're looking at here is not the whole system. It's this local observables, a subpart of the system. Okay? So you forget a lot of information. There's a lot of mixing that can happen. Okay? And that subpart, then this can happen. So you can have thermalization, proper thermalization, no oscillation.
So oscillation
even.
Time.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
No
oscillations, that's right. Oscillations die. So you look at average of local observable in a big system. At large time, no oscillation. Convergence. Proven mathematically. Yeah, other question.
I was going to ask about people who discuss this phenomenon of many body localization.
Yeah.
There's been some discussion about whether it can happen in translationally invariant systems.
Yes.
So it would seem that what you're saying here would rule that out. Is that?
Yeah, so within the conditions I have, indeed, yeah. So I think
without any other conserved quantities in a translation invariant system, it converges. It converges to a Gibbs distribution.
Yes, to Gibbs distribution. So I have, of course, certain conditions. Mm-hmm. And these are, you have to look at these conditions, the non-trivial conditions, right? So the existence of large time limit of this, you know, two time set to be less non-trivial. If you think about it, it's not just taking a local observable at zero and a local observable at t and assuming that they decorrelate. It's not that. It's stronger than that. Okay? Or the asymptotic, also a very important condition, the large time uniform clustering. That also is non-trivial. Now, perhaps for localization, you might expect this to happen, but probably the susceptibilities might fail, I mean, something like that. Right? So that's the thing. But yeah, under these conditions, yeah, then you have to have thermalization, gas thermalization.
More questions? No? I think it's clear? Okay, so we'll talk to you later again.
Thank you.
We have a 5-minute break.